going to begin in chapter 41 and finish up some thoughts from chapter 41 of Genesis, and then we will continue into chapter 42. I was planning on doing some material, just looking at some possible connections between Joseph and Christ and the figures and typology there. But I changed my mind. So if you want the information, I'll tell you where to get it. And it was not original to me anyway. And you can go do some studying on that on your own. But I decided we would just continue to go through. Did we actually do the questions last week, chapter 41?
No.
Okay, we just went through the chapter. I don't. Oh, wait. Yes, I did cover.
No, I don't have
that. All right. I do not have my questions with me. They're in my office. So I'm going to let y'all read the questions. Jonathan, will you be my question reader?
Why not?
I like that attitude.
And answer too.
No, he doesn't have to answer any of the questions. All he's going to do is ask them. All right, give us question number one.
Question number one. There are actually two parts to question number one. So the first part of question number one, how many dreams did Pharaoh have?
Pharaoh had two dreams. Okay.
And what were the creatures in his dreams?
By creature, I would include both substances. I didn't know how to ask that, so without giving it away. So, there's cattle in the first dream and corn or wheat in the second dream. Okay, question two.
Who did Pharaoh have called to tell him the meaning of his dream?
Alright. He called all the magicians and all the wise men of Egypt to come and to give him the interpretation of his dream. Question three.
Who did the chief butler say had interpreted his dream?
Alright. Young Hebrew man. So he said Joseph was the one who interpreted his dream. Who did Joseph say interpreted the dream? God did. Okay? So Joseph told him all interpretations come from God, but 2 years later, the statement that the butler makes is, this Hebrew interpreted my dream in prison. Okay? Question four.
What did the number of objects in the dreams represent?
Alright, 7 full years of plenty and 7 years of famine. Question 5.
What percentage of food that was grown in the land did Joseph recommend that the government take to prepare for the lean years, and how abundant was it?
Alright, so the first part of that is what percentage of food did the government take?
20%.
20%, 1/5. And then how abundant. Say what?
It'd be nice now, wouldn't it?
How abundant was it?
Like sand.
Sand.
All right. It got to the point where they quit counting because they had so much stored up that they quit actually taking an account of how much was coming in. And that gives you an idea because think about it from this perspective. Joseph knows in 7 years he's got to have enough to prepare to feed a whole nation plus for 7 years. And this is one of the most powerful and greatest nations on earth at this time. So it's not like a little small few thousand people for 7 years. It's the whole nation. But the food is so abundant, he quits counting. Because that's how much is available And he knows there's enough.
I just got a comment. John.
Go ahead. Comment. John, go first.
This is corn, right?
Yes, wheat, grain.
Yeah. What about the vegetables now? Could they grow anything?
The indication seems to be that they would have taken in that, but that the idea is if you've got grain, you can feed yourself in a famine time. And so and the indication, though, is during the famine years, no, they wouldn't have been able to grow vegetables or anything else. But I think it has to do with the ability to store grain for years ahead, but I don't know. It does not tell us the Nile dried up, but that seems to be, it seems to be kind of a connotation, because the Nile is really the source of water for the fields there in Egypt. If the Nile doesn't get the, you know, sufficient water and overflow its banks every year, they get droughts.
I just didn't know secondly, history tell us
anything. I'm not sure of it.
By extension, if they had that much stuff, they had enough to feed their livestock.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not they were just
so right.
They
good point.
They weren't eating just grain.
Absolutely.
Well, Jenny had a good point that in verse or in chapter 43, when Israel tells them to go back, in verse 11, he tells them to take a little balm, honey, gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. So they haven't been able to grow something. Because they were suffering the famine as well. And so that must, I mean, somehow so, they would have also had some, but Canaan wasn't a famine.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Right. So, a couple of things to realize. Some things will grow even with very little water. That doesn't mean you have enough to actually feed yourself with. You know, there's some things, especially in dry, arid parts of the world, that will grow anyway, though they don't grow in abundance. So it doesn't mean they were completely without anything, but they didn't have enough to sustain themselves even for a year, is the indication. But if you have grain, you can feed yourself, you can feed your livestock, you can continue to sustain yourself. So that's the primary issue.
Julia reminded me, they were also doing that in Canaan, not Egypt, even though there was a famine in Canaan. They still had a different type of maybe water system, things like that.
Right. They still had the Jordan River. They still had other options. All right. Is that all on question 5?
My comment guys, I was going to make it really on 9-7, so a little bit.
Okay. Question 6.
Why did Pharaoh choose to place Joseph as second in command in Egypt?
All right. Joseph recommended finding someone who was a man of wisdom and understanding, discernment, judgment. Pharaoh picked Joseph because he said, God is with you. And so that's Pharaoh's reasoning for Joseph being the one put in charge. Question 7.
After the government took the food from the Egyptians during the abundant years, did they give it back to them at no cost during the lean years?
No.
No. Okay. Your question.
Okay. It says they took the food from the Egyptians. Did the Egyptians own land with people in Egypt? So this was a wealth redistribution.
It was, that's something actually I want to, let me hold off on answering the question and I'll answer it as I go along because that's something part of what I wanted to discuss in this.
I think it's kind of ironic that they took the food from them and sold it back to us.
That's true. Now, here's how we know, let me answer one part of your question. Here's how we know that there were landowners. The first year when they come back and they don't have the second year of the famine, when the Egyptians come back to Joseph to buy more food, and they don't have any more money because they spent all the money they had buying food the previous years. And so they come and they say, well, take our cattle. Well, the next year they come back, they still don't have money, and now they don't have cattle, they say, take our land. And then the next year they come back and they say, well, we don't have land, we don't have cattle, we don't have money. Basically, they became slaves to Pharaoh. Pharaoh ended up, through this process, owning all, or the indication is all by percentage, all the land in Egypt. Because of this process of providing food for the nation. And the nation having to come and pay for it. Now, here's the question. Since Joseph is a man of wisdom, understanding, discernment, and God was with him in this, did Joseph do that which was wrong in requiring the people to buy the food back, even to the point of selling everything that they had in order to buy the food? Were Joseph's actions wrong? Morally.
Well, he was an employee,
mm-hmm.
And after what he was doing, probably didn't break any of their laws. So.
Okay. So, as second in command and every choice in Egypt being under his decision anyway, save the throne itself, he could make, write, and determine the laws. So it wasn't against the law. So, all right, so it's not against the law. Therefore, from that perspective, it wouldn't have been morally wrong. Eddie?
Well, if he had not done that, a lot of them would have come to get more than they needed, and they would have ended up selling it to some of their neighbors.
Okay.
That way, it was a long-term plan. The food lasted everybody longer.
Okay, so there's possibly a justification for doing it, though we're talking about this in somewhat of a hypothetical because the scripture doesn't say why they sold it, just says that they sold it. So it could have been that he did so in order to keep from people hoarding or trying to come in and take more than their allotted amount. Eddie?
I think it's interesting in 47:22, you find that Joseph did not buy the land of the priests, for they had a fixed allowance for Pharaoh to live on that allowance, therefore they did not sell the land.
Okay.
So, I would say that Joseph probably was not doing anything wrong by buying the other land, but when you look and continue and read on down, he put stipulations on what they're to do, because as servants then, they're going to go sow the land, and at harvest they have to give a certain amount. So very well could have just been that Joseph was making provisions for Egypt, for even after the 7 years of famine was over, as a businessman, because he's a businessman, he's doing business. It's not him doing stuff out of spite, it's not him trying to starve people or take things away. I think he's just doing it as a businessman.
Okay, great.
He was told not to let John go out of the city.
You have to wonder, too, if Joseph had not taken the food and stored it, would the people in the land have done it for themselves?
All right. This is actually what I wanted to get to. Now, remember that number that we were talking about? Now, on Eddie's point, let me get that first. On Eddie's point, Joseph didn't rip the land out from under them and then leave them homeless. They ended up selling the land. The ownership of the land went to Pharaoh, save the priest that had an allotment in the law. But the individuals continued to live on the land. They basically became sharecroppers in that mentality of early American lifestyle, where they didn't own the land. They worked the land, and a portion of what came out of the land went to Pharaoh.
And
that's an interesting point. The same amount they gave during the years of plenty, the 7 years of plenty, 1/5, 20%, is the same amount they gave after they didn't even own the land anymore. That amount didn't increase because they didn't own the land. The same amount was taken, 20%. Now, here's what I want to point out, though, in this discussion of, did Joseph do anything wrong? Could the individual in Egypt, common Joe, have provided enough for himself for the next 7 years of famine?
No.
Yes.
All right.
What was keeping anyone from doing this?
They were giving one-fifth over the course of 7 years, and it was so much that they stopped counting. I would think that they could have continued to save up and stock themselves.
This is a simple math.
They probably didn't know that it was going to be 7 years of payment, and you could not have convinced all those people of that.
But don't you think they knew, because why else would all of a sudden...
Let's take a couple of steps back, and we'll get to those as we go on. Point number one, how much of that which they came in, remember what the dream was. Go back to chapter 41. We may not get to chapter 42. Go back to chapter 41 and notice the dream. There came up out of the river seven cows, fine looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. You go down to the interpretation and notice what Joseph says. The dreams of Pharaoh are one. Verse 25. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. And the seven thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt. This wasn't, they had normal, everyday crops and harvest. God increased their harvest abundantly. To the point where, with the government taking one-fifth, 20%, 20% over 7 years would be enough to feed them the next 7 years. So, let's just do the math. How much would it have taken for the Egyptians to provide for their needs, if they only provided for their needs to sustain themselves? How much would they have consumed the first 7 years?
80%.
No, if they only consumed enough. So, all right, if 20% would feed them for the 7 years of famine, how much would have fed them for the years of plenty? 20%. Which means they had how much excess every year? 60%. 20% went to the government, so that wasn't excess. They didn't have it. 20% would have fed them because it was enough to feed them for 7 years following that. That means they had 60% excess every year.
So they squandered.
And they consumed every bit of it.
Now,
here's the lesson for us. There's a lot of countries in this world today who have barely enough to feed themselves. They get enough to continue to the next year. What if America was put in a position where in 7 years, you were going to have 7 years where you didn't get anything? But God said, now, you've got enough right now to provide for those 7 years. All you have to do is live within that which is your actual needs, and then prepare for the future. Most people wouldn't do it. Alice's point was, A, we don't know if the people knew about the famine coming. We don't know. How many times do governments institute taxes and not tell you why? Okay? A lot of times. Okay, so it's never stated that the people are told whether there was a famine coming or not. Don't know. Here's what we do know. They took 300% more than what they needed to sustain themselves, and they consumed all of it. And when the time came that they needed it, they didn't have it. Because they lived to excess during the previous years. You know they did. They had to have, otherwise they would have had it in the following years. If they had prepared, they could have. But God knew they wouldn't. And God made a provision for them. That was Joseph. That was the dream. Okay? So God understood that they would not prepare. God understood that those in the surrounding countries and Israel itself would not prepare, but there's no indication that Israel, Jacob and them, received the plenty in the former years either. There's no indication that they received that. That was a prophecy for Egypt. Can't say they didn't, but there's no prophecy saying that they did.
So do you think they have the same famine as far as the same 7 years of famine?
I think that's a clear indication that they had the same 7 years of famine. So they may have had the same 7 years of bounty, but we don't know that. You can have bounty in one area, especially with different water sources, without having bounty in the other, but famine all over.
Verse 57 says, in all lands.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing, this prophecy that had to be fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
That God's hand was in that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we can count on God today to supply us with 7 years of plenty.
Correct.
And have somebody take it away from us and then give it back to us. Mm-hmm. I don't think that necessarily applies to us.
Correct. So, this is the point that I want us to consider through this. First of all, Joseph didn't do anything wrong by making the people pay for it, because here's the reality. They should have had plenty to pay for it. Even if they simply used that which they had gained in the previous 7 years to supply the financial means in order to pay for it, they could have done so. Because they had 60% every year that they didn't even need.
They could have stopped buying food too, though.
Absolutely. They could have prepared. They could have paid for it. They had other options, but they didn't take them. Which completely alleviates Joseph of any responsibility for them not providing for themselves. He's not morally culpable because they didn't provide for themselves. And if they didn't provide for themselves, and he sells it to them, that's just the reality of being responsible for their lives, because here's their choice. They can pay for it or they can die.
Put them on a boat.
Absolutely. So, the lesson that I want us to learn from this is, first, Joseph didn't do anything wrong. Second, governments as established by God do have the ability. Now, we're not discussing constitutional law or anything like that. We're talking about the ability to take from citizens for whatever. That's the option of the government. Okay? It was the option of Joseph. It's the option today. We're not talking about, as I mentioned, constitutional law. Does the law of the land allow it or not? That's another discussion. That's not a moral discussion. That's a civil discussion. What we're pointing out is Joseph acted within the actions that God stated were to be done. God said how much to take from the people, because that was part of the interpretation of the dream. That was given by God. Here's what you need to do. And that's exactly what Joseph did. And so that's the second thing. Third thing is that more often than not, when we're given more, we squander it. And here's where I want us to be reminded. How many, and I'm not talking strictly to the congregation here, I'm just thinking universally as the church. How many works, how many things that struggle financially could be taken care of if we didn't squander what God blessed us with by living to excess that we don't need? And all we really have to do, and this isn't even just America. It's a human problem. All we have to do is go look in the attic, in the basement, in the shed, in the that are full, and we are constantly saying, "I don't have enough room." To know that we spend more than we have to. Because if we only had enough to buy only that which we had needed to live on, we wouldn't have excess.
You know, we know, you just said that it was in God's plan that they would have enough food for everybody for 7 years, and we know that that was God's way of taking care of them. And then in Jesus speaking in Matthew, it says we would take no thought about food or clothing for tomorrow. And his teaching is basically the same as what God had in mind with the fifth. So he could take care of the people in the 7 years of famine.
And, you know, there's the understanding of what Jesus says in taking no thought. His point is, don't let that be your focus, and don't be anxious for those things. Don't let your thought, your worry, your focus be on physical things. But there's also the constant biblical teaching on stewardship.
And the soul. And absolutely. The soul was where he was really
going. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But it does plan to tell you that God will provide those things.
Absolutely.
Man and beast.
Absolutely.
That doesn't mean that you cannot have excess of the necessities of life.
Right.
It's nothing wrong with putting in your pantry something for a rainy day.
Absolutely. And that's something that is clear, is God doesn't condemn them for eating, using, and having what he blessed them with. There's nowhere in Scripture they're condemned for having consumed the 60%, but it's something to realize that they had the ability to prepare. But when they didn't, they were then beholden to someone else to provide for them.
And that's a good point. We become the slaves of those who feed us.
Absolutely. Eddie?
Can I bring up maybe an idea that suggests it was otherwise, that maybe they could have prepared except for the fact there was something that caused them to where they couldn't? Because if you go to chapter 41, and I'm not trying to be contradictory, I'm wrong, but verse 31, it says, and the plenty will be undone in the land by reason of the famine that will follow, for it will be very severe. Is it possible that the famine was that severe like any other they've ever seen, that even if they had stocked up with that 60%+, they still would not have had the money come to the end of 7 years? They still would have been in the same situation of having to sell the land, having to sell their cattle, having to be slaves.
I think the idea of that passage is that the famine was going to be so severe that the life they had for the prior 7 years would be as if it had never even existed. That bounty that they had would be like a life, literally the idea of a lifetime ago. It didn't even happen to me, because the famine I'm experiencing now is so severe.
Well, sometimes when we're in a time of plenty, we do squander.
Mm-hmm.
And that way the famine would have eaten up everything, because we'd squandered the excess.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so, you know, it's a reminder of stewardship. It's a reminder of understanding what God has given us. It's a reminder of God's providence for his people. Because here's the other thing. So Pharaoh owns all the land, right? After they sell it to him? Mm-hmm. When Israel comes into the land, where are they put? Goshen. What's the description of Goshen? It was the best land in Egypt. Now, think about the Egyptians' perspective on that. If the Egyptians still owned all the land personally,
they wouldn't have been able to have a separate land just for themselves to grow the nation.
Even the selling of the land was God working through providence to put Israel in the land of Egypt to provide for them, but to separate them from the Egyptians. Because now Joseph has control of all the land, Pharaoh has control of the land, and Joseph can take people out of the best land and put Israel there.
Isn't it funny how a situation that looks so dark and drear, the best place can come out of?
Absolutely. And it was the best thing for Israel. Because the indication is, if Israel had stayed in Canaan, the way the moral degradation in Canaan had affected, we can go look at Judah, go look at the actions of every other part of Israel's family that stayed in that land. Ishmael, Midian, and the list goes on. Moab, Ammon, all of them were idolaters by the time Israel came back out of Egypt. All of them. But Israel comes back out. Not that they hadn't had problems with idolatry in Egypt, but turn to Joshua chapter 23. Or 24.
Well, quick, I think that's the slide on slide one. I think that's something we forget is that, Esau became the Edomites. They could have chosen to be a good nation.
Absolutely.
All of these nations had opportunities, and sometimes I think we forget that they have those same opportunities.
Joshua chapter 24, verse 15, a passage that we're very familiar with, or we ought to be, but that says something that I think is important that I think sometimes just skim over because of the significance of the first part of the verse. And if it seem evil, verse 14. Now therefore, fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord. What river?
Jordan.
Now, geography. Where's Israel standing at this point?
Standing on the west side,
about to go
on the east.
No. Okay. They're in Israel. They're in Canaan. They've conquered the land. They're in it. But there's this idea of the life that was before they inherited the land. Oh, you mean like the golden calf? And the problems with idolatry? Even in their time in the wilderness? Numbers chapter 25?
Well, that just was a residue from their stay in Egypt.
Okay, so here's what I want us to see. Israel wasn't untouched by idolatry in Egypt. But God put them in a place where they were still separate. Remember, Joseph told his brothers when they came into Egypt to tell Pharaoh, "You're shepherds." Why? Because shepherds were an abomination to the Egyptians. Which meant the Egyptians wouldn't have wanted to have anything to do with Israel. They would have left them alone. So, through this, yes, they still get affected by idolatry, but it's not like Moab, it's not like Ammon, it's not like Edom, it's not like Midian, it's not like all these other nations that were their family that got eaten up with idolatry. Moab and Ammon started serving Chemosh. They started sacrificing their children to idols. But Israel came out. Now,
and to me, it's just God working out his promise that he made to Abraham.
Absolutely.
His hand is in everything that is going on.
Absolutely.
Even though it may not look like it is sometimes.
Absolutely. And that's, it's like Joseph's life exemplified in Israel. Because there's Joseph receiving dreams from God, and then he gets sold by his own brothers. He goes down into Egypt, and he ends up in Potiphar's house, and he's doing good, and he gets promoted, and everything's great. And here comes Potiphar's wife, and he ends up in prison. Well, you look at Israel. God calls Abraham out of Ur of the Chaldees. He brings him to a land. He gives him bountiful blessings. He increases him and he increases him and he increases him, and then troubles him. But through that, God continues to increase. But then they end up in Egypt. And they end up being slaves. But then God brings them out and he increases them again. And then they turn their back on him and they go back into sin and they desire to serve other gods and they're stuck in the wilderness. And he brings them into Israel and he blesses them again. It's this constant cycle, but through it all, the overarching theme is God looking forward? Genesis chapter 3, verse 15. To the one who would come through Abraham by your seed, all nations of the earth will be blessed. And had Joseph not been sold, been put in prison, and then interpreted the dream, and provided for the land, and taken the land, and sold the grain, Israel would have died in Canaan, having never become a nation, because Israel didn't have enough to sustain itself for the 7 years of famine. God, and Joseph points this out, God sent me here to save you. Alright?
It's just like us, God expects us to do everything we can for ourselves, but He's always looking at us.
Absolutely. As one person put it, you've got to pray as if everything is dependent upon God, and live and act as if it's all dependent upon you.
Yes. I have a man tell me the other day that he wasn't worried about hard times because God was going to take care of him. And I said, well, I'm not worried about it. God gave me a brain. I'm